Okay, our next presentation is Living the Life He Wants, Stoking Employment Opportunities. The presenter for this item is another blind person who is using his own life experience to raise expectations for all blind people. His title is with Meta, but we didn't invite him for that reason. We invited him because he is a blind person who is pursuing his dreams in many ways. One of the ways he has pursued to raise expectations in his own life includes riding a bike from coast to coast in this country. But not just that, we've talked about telling our stories, and he has committed to using his story to try to bring attention to the employment and underemployment issue that exists and the low expectations that are at the root of blind people having employment opportunities. We've gotten to know him really virtually during the pandemic. So it's great to have him here in person at this convention. I got to first meet him in person a couple of months ago at our national office. I got to actually meet his whole family. They were running all over the building. He's got a number of little kids, and it was great to see them running around. So here to talk to us about his experience and the work that we've done together is Jack Chen.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone. I'll say that cheering was for me, but wait till after this, and then maybe you won't be cheering. I don't know. So thank you, Dina, for that wonderful presentation. I think you basically said everything I was going to say. So can I just say ditto and then walk off? No, I guess I won't. But I will say that I was really impacted by your story of low expectations. You see, when I was growing up, people didn't look at me like they did today. My family, I'm a Chinese American. I hear that. That's good. My greater family lives in Taiwan, and both my brother and I are visually impaired. And when we were growing up, my relatives in Taiwan wrote us off. They didn't know what to do with us. They had no experience with people who are blind and visually impaired. And so thank you, Dina, for not kowtowing to the tyranny of low expectations. I appreciate that. I want to tell you a little bit about my story, but it is really with the help of other people that I've been able to do what I've done in my life. Through my wife and my four kids, which Mark mentioned, were running all over the building. I love them. Are tuned in, so thank you. But also to my God who I serve. So, yes, amen. So New Orleans, and who here is from New Orleans? All right. I love this city in many ways. New Orleans is a city of resilience. I don't know how many know, but there was a large fire in 1788 that threatened to wipe New Orleans off the face of the map. Okay, and they were building it back up. And 6 years later, in 1794, another fire came and threatened to wipe New Orleans off the face of the map. During the Civil War, political unrest, daily torchings and burnings, again, threatened the city. Hurricane Betsy in the 1960s, Katrina in 2005, and most recently Ida, that 1-2 punch. They thought they could take New Orleans down, but they couldn't. Because, you know, New Orleans is our city, is a cultural icon in our entire country. It stands today, everyone knows New Orleans for what? Among other things, great music, and my favorite, great food. Okay. And so I say again, New Orleans is a city of resilience. But for me, this has been a really powerful homecoming. You see, for me, it's been an emotional experience because I was here 31 years ago, and that was the last time I was here. I was coming to New Orleans for a cornea transplant. I went to Louisiana State University Eye and Ear Hospital. All right. And as I flew on the plane here from New Jersey, I remember very specifically seeing the blue sky above and the white clouds below. And I was thinking to myself, how much more could I see on the way back? They told me that I would be able to read a newspaper. I would be able to go shopping and see the price on the box of cereal. This was my sophomore year in high school. I had been to New Orleans many times in the past before 1991 for other cornea transplants that didn't go well. This time, though, they said that they had developed DNA technology that would help me to be able to find tissue donors which my body would not reject. So here I was going into the surgery, and when I came out, they had put this big, thick gauze pad over my eye and taped it up really tight. I sat in my bed for a couple of days before I went to the examination room. And when I got there, I remember sitting on this big, hard plastic chair. I remember the doctors coming over, and they peeled off one layer of bandages. And my mom and my doctors were in the room, but nobody else moved. And I was puzzled. So what's going on? So I went, impatient as I was, I went and touched my face like this. And when I felt the skin of my eyelid, I knew something was very wrong because I couldn't see anything. And I had become totally blind. Despite the sweltering weather outside, it felt like someone took a cold bucket of ice and just poured it, all of it, right to the deepest reaches of my soul. I was without hope and completely fearful about what the future was going to be. I imagined myself walking down a long hallway, and a door to the left was slamming, and a door to the right was closing, and behind me, and above me, and below me. But what could I do but just put one foot in front of the other? The alternative was terrifying, to sit down and do nothing. And so what I did was put one foot in front of the other. What was I doing? Thank you. Before I came to New Orleans, I was studying for my SATs. Remember I said I was a sophomore in high school. And so to block out all of the fear, I went back to studying for my SATs when I returned. I put one foot in front of the other, not knowing what was going to come in the future. I was a pretty mediocre Braille user at the time, I have to admit. But I dug hard into it. Anyone remember the 3,500-word Barron's SAT book? Yeah, I decided to memorize the whole thing. So, no, that is not a testament to my ability, but my pig-headedness. So, SATs were in 3 months, and I was going to give it all I got. And I was frightened to go back to school. I had always interacted with school and gotten around by the limited eyesight that I already had. And so going back and navigating the school with a cane was frightening to me. Most of my friends wouldn't really hang out with me. You know, I imagine for a young person, seeing someone else go through tragedy had to be very difficult, and they didn't know how to react. But for me, it left me alone. I jumped back into wrestling. I was on the wrestling team as a sophomore. But if my record were to predict my future success, it would be maybe one win and a whole lot of losses. Well, In December or so of that year, test results came back, and my parents opened the envelope for me, and I was shocked. I had scored 10 points lower than my brother, who was off on his freshman year at Harvard, and I could not believe what was happening. At the end of the wrestling season, past results were not a predictor of future success, thank goodness. I wound up with a winning record and wrestled at districts. But the biggest test of all was coming. My friend Oliver and my friend Ryan and I walked to the guidance counselor's office for that fateful call some of you may remember, placing a call to the college admissions office to find out whether you got in. Well, only one person in my school each year had ever gotten into the school. And so when Oliver got on the phone, he hooped and hollered and said he'd gotten in, and I was so happy for him, but I was fearful for myself. And then I got on the phone, and I don't know how I managed to stammer out my name, and then I heard, "Mr. Chen, you've been accepted to Harvard." I felt like my whole future had been squeezed into this really tight package. But now I had cut off the zip tie and it was exploding. My future was really dark in the past, but it started to have some light and some life. Just kind of like what I said about New Orleans and how it rose from the ashes again and again. But Harvard wasn't easy. No, no. I only had about 20% of the reading materials that I needed. Going to class was hard. It was like putting a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle together. You know, I had some lectures, some readings, and that was the easy stuff. That's like the edge pieces and the corner pieces. But all this other stuff in the middle, you had to extrapolate. You had to guess. Sometimes you were right, and sometimes you were wrong. But I did get through it. And I managed to graduate. It gets better. A few years later, I went to work for a startup. I had graduated with a computer science degree, and I went to work for a startup building home automation technology way before Internet of Things was even a term. They asked me to manage a data center at the company. But the operating system for those sophisticated pieces of equipment wasn't accessible, and I couldn't read what was going on. I couldn't see the lights on the front of the machine to know whether I had to replace the hard drives or not. But at the same time, they also asked me to help them design the second generation of their product. So in doing so, I helped them build a patent portfolio and emerged from the company a few years later with my name as a listed inventor on over 40 patents. Yeah, I guess I got a little tired of computers and jumped into law and went to law school at night and graduated and then went to take the bar exam. So I heard someone say that, yes. You know what's coming. The National Conference of Bar Examiners told me, "Mr. Chen, you're not going to be allowed to use a computer to take the test. No, I'll give you a cassette tape, and you can take the exam on tape." And for anyone who has never done that before, it's like taking a 200-page exam on a one-line teleprompter. And so I've been so... Well, I did pass, thank God. In New York and New Jersey. And I've been so blessed to work on so many things in my lifetime and have so many experiences. I know my wife and my four kids are tuned in, and I have the most wonderful family ever. I've had a chance to work as product counsel for Google for over 10 years. I worked as a member of the public policy team as a product manager for Chrome OS. For the last year and a half, I've had the opportunity to support the legal team that builds supports the product team that builds the technology that supports 99% of Facebook's revenue. I've run marathons and Ironmans and climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and all these things. And so do I share all these things to tell you about how great I am or to inspire you or to show you that blind people can do anything? No, not really. Let me tell you a story. 5 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to go to my 25th college reunion at Harvard. And when I was standing in the Harvard yard having lunch one day, my friend Edwin Lin came up to me. And he told me, "Hey, Jack, I have one big regret from college." He said, "I couldn't help you more." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, you remember, you and I were roommates for one summer, and you had to take differential equations, math class." And he said, I volunteered to go with you to class to help you understand what was going on the board. And he said, I went with you that first day, and he said, the teacher was going so fast and was putting so many things and equations up on the board, he said, I couldn't help you. It was impossible. Well, Edwin watched me struggle and suffer for the next 3 years, but he did see me graduate with a degree with honors. And he said, so Edwin is now a senior executive at Citigroup, and he told me the story. He said, I had the opportunity to interview a blind person for my group. He said that when he was about to extend the offer letter, his coworkers told him, "You must be crazy. Do you think a blind person can be successful at an organization like ours?" And Edwin said, "Yes, he can. I know, because I've seen it done before." And so it's that same sentiment that inspired me and my co-founder, Dan Berlin, to create a movie about blindness and success. Why don't we watch the trailer?
A young woman, shoulder-length blonde hair.
I first met Jack on paper. I read his credentials. I thought, wow, it's a really great...
Jack, cooking.
Reputable schools.
A college campus.
Super brilliant, off the charts.
Jack and a laptop.
Extremely impressive. Career, extremely intelligent, and completely blind.
Sterling Light Productions.
There's not just bias, there's just associations that people have. And these are not good associations.
Dan Berlin using a white cane.
Weakness, need of support.
We were looking for something that would be incredibly hard to do.
What's the craziest thing you could think of ever doing?
Jack and a laptop.
And he said, ride my bike across the country. We had no idea that RAM actually existed.
Bicycle wheels spin.
When they hear about Race Across America, they're always like, oh, I want to do it. And I'm like, all right, let's talk for a minute. If you can't just get up and ride 100 miles, you don't even want to start training.
A kind of crazy endurance challenge that most people would never take on.
A Statue of Liberty.
But if a blind guy,
Jack trains,
takes it on, it's telling you something about your assumptions about a blind person, isn't it?
This spring.
I'm an assistant United States attorney.
Currently a philanthropist.
I'm Jack Chen, assistant general counsel at Facebook.
It's legal to pay blind people less than the minimum wage. You can literally pay nothing.
70% of people like me are unemployed.
Jack Chen, Dan Berlin, Tina Ament, Kyle Kuhn.
How amazing it is to cross the entire continent on a bicycle.
Many, many people thought we were crazy for even starting it.
Nighttime. Bicyclists in the rain.
Hey, classic Kansas rain.
A flash of lightning.
There's a giant tornado.
I took on this race.
Two men on a tandem bike.
With a skeptical sense of disbelief that this was possible.
Producer Lucas Benkin.
Not only the longest single stage race
in the entire world.
It's like a million races in one.
There was definitely an element of danger, regardless of whether cyclists were blind or not.
Directed by Ramon Fernandez.
If just one person who's in a position to make an opportunity sees this movie and changes their behavior, then I think we've won.
Surpassing Sight. Join us on Facebook at Team C2C.
Thank you. Race Across America was a 3,100-mile cycling race from San Diego to Annapolis, crossing 13 states, three mountain ranges, and 175,000 feet of elevation gain. Put 40 people into two 400-square-foot RVs, give them no sleep, make them work 16 hours a day, getting eight cyclists from one country to the other. Sure, nothing can go wrong. No, it actually was the toughest thing I've ever done in my entire life, by far. On the second day of that race, I got a calf cramp. Who gets a calf cramp on the second day of a seven-day, nine-day race? What was I going to do? If I dropped out of the race, our chances of finishing would be less than 30%. I got an infection in my toe. And the crew chief had to go online to YouTube to watch a video for how to do this minor surgery to lance somebody's toe. I got yelled at by a number of people on my team for something I said. We had to stop the race, and we had to have this come to Jesus moment because it threatened to tear the whole team apart. So like I said, work 16 hours a day and shove people into this tight, confined space, and nothing will go wrong. But one of the things that Dan Berlin, who's my co-founder, said in the movie, he said, it's in the deepest struggles that you will find the vitality of life. My friend Edwin had personally watched me struggle, and he had personally watched me find victory and rise from the ashes. You see, the thing that really impacted me and Dan was the fact that some statistics say that 70% of college-age blind people in America can't find a job. Dan and I wouldn't stand for that. Dan was a CEO of his own corporation, a very successful vanilla extract company that produced 75% of the vanilla extract in our country. I was an attorney working for Google at the time, having transferred over to Facebook later on, and the two of us said, we had to do something about this. So when you think about the stories like Edwin, and when you think about what other people see in us when they see us becoming victorious and surmounting the challenges that we have, we tell our own story. We wanted to tell our own story, but we could only do it on a one-on-one basis. And I know each of you does that as well. We wanted to solve this story at scale, solve this problem at scale. And so we said, we're going to take on the toughest cycling race in the world, but we're going to do it as blind professionals. We want to tell a story of success both on and off the bike. We wanted every person, every hiring manager, every chief executive of every corporation in America to see our story and have that Edwin experience. We wanted every fully sighted person in the world to say, yes, he can, because I know I've seen it done before. And to close, I'm going to ask each of you to come onto this journey with us and to partner with us to do this. First of all, we're so incredibly honored that the National Federation of the Blind has partnered with us as an executive producer of this film, and that we will be having the worldwide premiere of this at the conference here this evening. So each of you is invited. Please come. The time and the location has changed on the agenda, so it will be at 5:30 at 333 Canal Street at an independent theater. We'll get to see it on the big screen. So I would want each of you in the room and each of you who is online, start telling people about this film. When the full release comes out, I want everybody to see it. So please help us spread the word, number one. Number two, for the folks who are blind and low vision in the room and online, sometimes it feels like the doors are going to be slammed in your face. I've had that experience before myself. You have no idea where things are going to go. But when we all face those challenges together and we emerge victorious, you know, you lift me up. And I'll continue to do the same. Battling through challenges, I'll hopefully lift you up as well. Let's together create more and more Edwin Lins in this world. People who can say, yes, he can, because I've seen it done before. Together, we're going to take 70% unemployment rate, and we're going to knock it down to 7% or lower. Thanks, everyone.
Great job, Dan.